Earlier this month, Chuck Morone was a guest on Northland Morning and said something kind of radical. Jobs, he said, are a byproduct of a productive economy, not a surrogate for it. Chuck Morone is an engineer, land use planner, and kind of a radical guy. He founded something called Strong Towns, encouraging communities to value resilience over efficiency, to take small incremental steps instead of undertaking huge projects, to think about continuous adaptation, how places actually work, and what people need today, and to stop thinking of future growth and to concentrate on current finances. For instance, he's not convinced that growth at all costs is the way to go, especially when you have to kick the can down the road to pay for it. He's not sure jobs should be the be-all and end-all when it comes to community projects either. A factor, certainly, but not the only consideration. Northland Morning's Lisa Johnson wanted to explore some of these ideas in more detail with Chuck, especially as they relate to some of our housing challenges here in the Northland.
In the past, when there were projects that cities were considering, there were a lot of different things that needed to be considered. We seem to be living in a time where locally, at least, it seems as though the idea is this is investment in the community and it's going to create jobs and people aren't really supposed to ask any more questions after than that. There are people whose voices are not being heard. 800 families, if I'm remembering correctly, on the list right now of people who are experiencing homelessness and don't have a place to live here in our community.
What you're describing, I would describe as the results of centralization. We centralized our housing market to make it more efficient, to make it more accessible, to get more people into housing and to create what, you know, the buzzword of the last century really has been is the ownership society. So the federal government stepped in and said, we're going to lower down payments. We're going to extend terms. We're going to let people get into 30-year mortgages. And what it's done is it created at first this huge boom in homeownership and related construction and growth. I mean, this is, we look back at the 50s and 60s and we're like, wow, everything, you know, was so easy back then. You could have one blue collar job and, you know, raise a whole family and own a house and have two cars. You look today and what has happened is this trade-off we talked about last time for local governments has become really this acute problem. We've grown and grown and grown, but that growth isn't productive enough to cover our long-term expenses. The governments are so desperate now for growth that they really will take in anything that comes in the door. But really, the only projects that governments are getting right now, especially in a city the size of Duluth, are ones that are tied to the centralized Wall Street capital. So they're large. They're able to be securitized and sold onto a secondary market. They fit like a standardized package. What you're not getting is you're not getting the local nuance, you're not getting the local feedback, and you're not getting that local adaptation to meet the needs, because the needs of, you know, Duluth are very different than the needs of Minneapolis or you know, Southern California or Texas or Florida. We just have lost that feedback.
One of the other things that you mentioned when we talked the last time was the idea of even starting the process differently by finding out where people are struggling, I think you said. It sort of seems like people with the money are the ones that are being taken seriously, whether they're the people that want to build a project or the people that can afford, for example, to live in some of these luxury apartments that either folks that are really well off can afford or maybe 4, 5, or 6 college students together can afford.
Yeah, we've created a mess for ourselves. There's no doubt. And I think what you are describing is really the kind of chronic pain that's now becoming acute pain, you know, of just a long period of bad fiscal diet and exercise at the local government level. Look, the bargain that we've made in this current paradigm, when we look at homeowners across Duluth, across my hometown of Brainerd, across really any city, is we say to them, 95% plus of you, we're going to protect your neighborhood from all change. We're not going to have your neighborhood evolve or adapt or change in any way. We're just going to keep it stuck, stagnated like it is. And people like that because most of the change that we get is really bad in the way we build cities today. But the bargain then is 5% of this area, and it's usually the poorest 5% because it's the least enfranchised. It's the place where fewer people can resist and show up and have any clout to stop something. We'll say that 5% is going to change radically. It's going to change overnight. It's going to be dramatic. The people who are there will no longer be there. They're going to have to find some other arrangement. And we call this, you know, urban renewal or tax subsidy zone or opportunity zone now or whatever we're going to call it. What happens to them when that neighborhood changes? There's not another place for them to go. And I think the other part of this is that of that 95% area that's left untouched, large and large swaths of that are becoming very poor as well. You've got without any kind of natural renewal mechanism, you know, they're just sitting waiting for the big project. They tend to stagnate and decline as well. So the crazy thing about Duluth is you have lots of substandard, bad, rundown housing that needs redevelopment dollars. You've got lots of redevelopment dollars, but the redevelopment dollars will only go to huge projects, not the kind of things that would actually, you know, affect the symptoms you're seeing. So what needs to happen, what we need to start talking about is how do these neighborhoods shift and evolve over time as opposed to in one big leap. In 2008 and 2009, people started to lose their homes. Housing became overvalued. When valuations went back down, mortgages reset. People couldn't refinance or couldn't meet their new payment. And they mailed in the keys. They got kicked out of their house. They left. When you look at that, many of those single-family homes could easily become duplexes, and the people would still have massive homes, even by U.S. standards. But we just don't allow that transformation to happen. It's against our local zoning rules. It's against the financing. It's against the insurance regulations. Everything in our system resists that. If we went back 100 years, if you had a family that came on tough times or was a little short of cash, it was very common to rent out a room. And people were able to make ends meet and their own, while also providing this whole layer of housing for people who were temporarily without housing or were transitioning or just had a difficult time finding a place to stay at rates that were affordable that people could get into. And I'm not saying you didn't have homelessness. I'm not saying you didn't have difficulty, but you didn't have it in the chronic ways that we experience it today. When we step back and look at not only Duluth, but, you know, the cities directly around it and the stuff that's been developed around it, the further you go away from, let me just as the outsider say, the further you go away from Canal Park, the further you go away from some of those old established neighborhoods, the more that financing thing starts to creep in, but also, you know, and become a huge problem. But on the other hand, the more the opportunity is because there are so many gaps in the system, there is so much space. A tiny home strategy should not be one that would be just relegated to the vacant lots that the city owns. Just the name itself, tiny home, it is kind of silly. If you go around to Duluth's older neighborhoods, any neighborhood that was built before the 1930s, and you know what you're looking for, you look closely at the houses, what you're going to see are tiny houses that have been added onto and added onto and added onto. But this is something that the way you're describing it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but the way you're describing it as a lifestyle choice for someone who could choose something different, what I'm talking about is like a starter home, you know, a way for people to get started. Right now, if you want to participate in our housing system, you have one of two options. You can either be a renter, which, you know, what we see is renters getting squeezed. We talked earlier about people, you know, the gentrification and people getting kicked out of their neighborhoods when things change dramatically. Being a renter is a very tenuous thing to do. Or you can be a homeowner. And if you're a homeowner, you have to meet all these requirements set up by our centralized financing system, which increasingly more and more people are having a difficult time doing. Those are the people we see out on the streets. Those are the people we see that are struggling to find housing. You know, when we look out and we see, wow, this is the pain being experienced, that's that group of people. We need to lower the bar of entry for them so that they can actually get into something that would be more akin to a starter home and not label it a tiny house, which is really like a lifestyle choice, but call it what it is, which is just a house. It's a smaller version of a house, which is perfectly acceptable for someone to live in. I've been in Detroit where people buy houses at auction for $6,000, $10,000, and then they'll rent them out for, you know, $500 a month. But here's the point. The people who are paying $500 a month, who essentially could buy the house, can't get a mortgage to buy the house. And they can't get a mortgage because they don't qualify with the centralized funding mechanism we have. They can't come up with the down payment. The mortgage companies won't issue a mortgage for a building that small or that cheap. And so they're essentially, even though they have the capital, they're essentially shut out of the market. There's a whole group of people in society, I mean, and it's growing by huge amounts every month, that are basically shut out of the system, not because they're unwilling to participate and not because they can't afford to participate, but because the way the system is set up, it doesn't allow them an entry point. That's a big part of this affordable housing problem. What you see going throughout Duluth is a lot of neighborhoods are in decline. They're not doing well. And then you have, you know, this big homeless problem that you layer on top of this. And so what we've said is, well, the way we deal with this is we're going to go in and, like you say, build these luxury apartments or do this renewal or redevelopment and make these large leaps and resurrect these places that have decayed. And we become very defensive throughout the rest of the system. If we can just mandate a very high standard, then we can slow this decline. Then we can, you know, reverse it. We can force people to maintain their yards and have nice housing. The reality is the opposite. The reason it's in decline is because there are fewer people participating. They have fewer options to participate. They're more stretched and spread thin when they do get to participate. That's the fundamental problem. And so we actually will increase the outcomes and get better outcomes by lowering the standard. And that's scary for people, right?
Northland Morning host Lisa Johnson talking with Chuck Marone, an engineer, a land use planner, and the founder of Strong Towns.